Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On today's podcast, comedian and journalist Ange Lafoy-Pierre returns to discuss horror, starseeds, and Happy the Cow. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I identify as otherworldly here on Big Squid. Hello, welcome to the latest episode of Big Squid. A slight change in plans with this episode was originally going to be the next Mission Impossible episode where the fabulous Adam, Richard and I have been going over the Mission Impossible films. We put up the first one. This was meant to be Mission Impossible 2, the one set in Sydney that for some reason has so much going on. It's such a mess of a film, but it's a really fun podcast. Anyway, this was meant to go up today, but after doing this interview with Ange last night, it felt like we were talking about some things that are in the news, and it felt a little bit more relevant to get it up immediately. And the Mission Impossible movies are evergreen, so I will put that one up next week, and we will get back on track with that then. But for today, we are listening to this really fun chat with Ange. She's one of my favourite guests, so I'm always pretty keen to get her podcast up as soon as possible. A quick reminder about the two shows I'm performing at the Melbourne Comedy Festival on April 16th is Big Squid Live with guests Celia Pakola and Josh Earl joining me as we compete against each other to create the great Aussie movie list. That's right, we're going to go up against one another. We're going to try to come up with the greatest list of Aussie movies that we can, and then our audience will get to vote. And you'll be able to vote as well if you're living elsewhere once it becomes a live podcast. But that is all going down on the 16th. And then on the 17th, my award-winning return to stand-up comedy, Little Victories, is performing for one night only at the Melbourne Town Hall. As loyal listeners to Big Squid, you can access a discount on ticket purchases by using the code PODCAST. I'd love to see you in Melbourne if you can make it. Also, for fans of my original podcast, Can You Take This Photo, Please? I've been re-releasing old episodes on my Patreon, and this week uploaded a chat with Will Anderson from 10 years ago. So this is just as he was about to embark on his first improvised shows, and he's talking about what he's hoping to get out of them. They don't even really have a name at this point, because you now know them as What You Talking About, Will. And they're some of his most popular live events. But this is right before, he doesn't even have a title for it yet. And you can hear him discussing what the shows might be and what he's hoping for them to become. So to access this interview, there's previous interviews also from that podcast with Tom Gleason and Ben Elwood, all from 2013. Also on the Patreon, you can get just other bonus podcasts. There's a lot there. There's bigger discounts to live events and a whole lot of other stuff. So head to patreon.com/ Justin Hamilton, and you will find a tier that suits you. I will pop by at the end just to let you know what's happening for the rest of this week. But for now, let's bring in one of my favourite people in Ange Lafoy-Pierre. I've deliberately held this back from you before you came in, and it's all good. Don't panic.
No, this sounds terrible. I'm leaving.
No.
What is it? It's, tell me now.
It's all based on something that you sent me.
Okay.
That I only got to last week, and I knew we were catching up, so I didn't bother to reply until I saw you, which was the article you sent me, Why Did the Beatles Get So Many Bad Reviews? And it was pretty fascinating, actually, reading the New York Times, just getting stuck into Sgt. Pepper's, where they Richard Goldstein said, like an over-attended child, Sgt. Pepper is spoiled. Reeks of horns and harps, harmonica quartets, assorted animal noises, and a 91-piece orchestra. He mocks the lyrics as dismal and dull. And above all, the album fails due to an obsession with production coupled with a surprising shoddiness in composition. The flaw doesn't just destroy the occasional song, but permeates the entire album.
Yeah, see, that's always been my take. And it's unpopular now, but I stick with it.
I do.
I love the Beatles. You know, there was a chat that we had where I had been listening, re-listening, revisiting a lot of the Beatles, you know, pretty late at night during second lockdown, I think it was, in Sydney, and had really listened to some lyrics that I hadn't considered closely since I was a child, which were pretty misogynistic. Right. And it had like this light bulb moment that a lot of people have had before me and went like, hang on a tick, what? That's awful. And then brought that to you.
Yes.
And so, and the mark of my love was the excesses of my devastation at hearing, you know, misogyny in the Beatles. So, right. You know, this was precisely why I sent it on to you, because I think also, you know, it's not lost on me that we're two people who have just come back from a comedy festival, heading into more seasons. You do have to, like, I think the price of getting a review in Australia at the moment is, it's like maybe like your left or your right arm, maybe both. You have to mail them to an arts reviewer, and then they'll consider coming.
Right.
And that's how it is. So it's not like, you know, I've been inundated with reviews that I disagree with. However, I think the other reason I sent this to you was I think there's something, I think there isn't a comedian in the world who doesn't enjoy, you know, mocking, like, I don't know, reading about reviewers being really badly wrong, right?
Right, yes. Yeah, I get that. And being kind of having their finger off the pulse, essentially.
Yeah. This idea that the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, but isn't there a part of you that also wants a great reviewer to look at your work and discover all the layers and review layers that you didn't even know that you've added to your work, that you can sit back and
project some meaning that I never intended yet.
Right. It's exciting.
No, it totally is. Of course I would love to be reviewed. Any reviewers listening? Yeah, I would like, I'll take them. I'll take good, bad reviews, whatever. At the moment, the arts sector in journalism has been, you know, and let's, like, media was pretty badly hit by, it was one of the sectors that has not at all really recovered from the pandemic, but arts, journalism has been particularly badly affected. Mm. And it was always hard to get a review in Australia if you weren't on the telly, but it's very, very difficult now, verging on impossible.
Yeah.
And the same is actually true in the UK. So, and this is, I don't want at all this to turn into like a wine fest about like, no, look at my work. But yeah, I would love to be reviewed. And I think a good reviews, you don't even care. If the reviewer knows their stuff, you don't care if they have a go at you about something, because that's the actual tradition of arts criticism, right? It's like they'll tell you something that you need to know. It's like working with a good director.
Yeah.
Like they will see something that you couldn't see.
Yeah.
You can tell how long it's been since I've had a review, because I'm like, give me a bad one. Yeah. I don't care.
I'm ready for it. Yeah, I know what you mean. If back in the day when I was doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival all the time, if reviewers like John Bailey or Dan Ziffer or people like if they kind of pointed something out, I'd take it on board.
Yeah.
Because I also know that it comes with an idea of what I've done in the past as well. So
totally. Yeah, when you get people who come back and have sort of started to get that at this point in my career, and that's nice. And they're like, and they can sort of talk about,
Yeah. But I was lucky. I got a good review at the Adelaide Fringe, and I can't even remember what it was for. It might have been the Gilded Puppet or the Broken Chair or the Taffeta Giraffe Gazette, or I can't remember. But it was a nice review.
For a second, I thought these were like, you know, some real deep cut shows that you've written that I've never. I'm like, when did you do the Taffeta Giraffe Hammo, and what was that about?
No, I was just about to say what the site was, and I couldn't remember. Yeah. But you know, it doesn't matter.
I think what I did write an email to a producer at some point this during the Adelaide season, being like, I will take Horse and Hound at this point. Like, send me anyone. Like, I do not care. No disrespect to the good arts. Critics at Horse and Hound.
Yeah, they do a fantastic job with their equine reviews. Yeah. But it's interesting. So kind of one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up is that getting a reviewer, what we fail to sort of take into account sometimes is that you can get the wrong person for the job.
Mm.
Which, you know, you might just get someone who is from the real estate section or the Better Homes and Gardens section, and they don't quite understand what's going on and can't discern between not finding something funny but realizing that it is funny.
Yeah.
And then that's a hard thing to get your head around.
Yeah, benching your subjectivity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also sometimes you can just be in the wrong mood and you can just not be up for something. And the reason I bring that up is I have, weirdly, over the last few days, I felt pretty frustrated with a lot of things going on in my life, and I have turned to horror. I have been right into horror the last few days.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's been normally, to be honest, I'm a bit of a pussy.
Yeah.
But I have just been laughing hysterically at I finally watched The Purge and I watched X, and I thought they were both fantastic. And it was an interesting thing, and I wanted to discuss that with you of, I'm feeling a bit frustrated and kind of put upon by the world, and now I'm just sitting here watching horror movies and seem to be reacting in a way that I don't normally react.
Well, you know, I'm actually looking at the genre at the moment because we're doing a second season of Schmeidgeist, and one of the topics we're looking at is why horror is having this moment in the culture. And
Sorry to interrupt. According to a friend of mine who's a producer, film producer, Michael Ponton, horror movies do not do as well here in Australia as they do in the States, where they go through the roof.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, okay, a couple of things here.
Mm.
I think because we've been looking at the reason why horror is having a moment, and I think, you know, the pop psychology answer, but also like genuinely the answer is that is not like we don't actually enjoy someone being hacked to pieces if it's a slasher film, or like, you know, we enjoy the unreality of it, and what we're doing is experiencing our own very real visceral horror at something actually horrible in the world via a safe proxy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's kind of, I mean, I've mangled that, but you know, sorry to any psychologists listening, but like, that is kind of it. There are legions, I assume.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's one thing. And I think they've broken all the instruments for measuring the horror of daily life in US at the moment. Like, I was reading a piece, I think it was in the Washington Post, when I woke up this morning, just kind of cheer myself up. And it was about these big homelessness in like camps, like small cities that have cropped up, which are of the size that, you know, people used to sort of mythologize in the Depression era in the States. And they've kind of grown to such a, because the welfare, the safety net doesn't really exist in the US, or it's kind of, you know, there's some big holes in it, as we know. And so, you know, as the global downturn has hit there. People have just, a whole bunch of people have slipped below the poverty line, not enough affordable housing. Huge cities have cropped up and it's kind of like changing whole suburbs of the city. I think it was in Arizona somewhere, this camp that I was particularly reading about, and like neighborhoods that had kind of been, you know, ordinary, I guess what you would call middle class neighborhoods where people didn't have much but they got by, are essentially transformed. Like there's been like there are bodies found in dumpsters and there's like drugs being sold openly on the street. This is not at all to vilify people experiencing homelessness, by the way, either. No. This is that, you know, social discord and, you know, these issues do tend to accompany people who are living in these desperate situations.
Yeah.
And anyway, as one example of the horror that infects daily life in America at the moment, is it any surprise that they watch horror in greater numbers?
Yeah.
You know, and that particularly Gen Z who, you know, are kind of like doing the world for the first time, they're going, oh, this is awful.
Yeah.
Like, and so they are outperforming other demos in terms of how much horror they consume. The other thing I would say about it is that horror is, it is becoming a broader church, and like all the horror heads will like, it's pretty funny to go on some of the, I guess, fan communities online and see, you know, how incensed people become about this stuff, you know, because there's a lot of policing that goes on. It's like, that's not horror. This is horror. This is like, you know, it's what's in, what's out. But there is a lot of hybrid horror going on at the moment. So depending on how your producer friend is measuring it, and you know, a lot of the kind of stats that we see, it might not look like horror is having much of a moment. But if you look at, take for example, Wednesday, you know, part of the Addams Family franchise, was this runaway success, like this record-breaking success on Netflix, I guess was towards the end of last year. Horror heads would say, not horror.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be clinical about it, it's probably just horror adjacent. But
Tween goth?
Tween goth, but there's like, but there's this sort of...
I haven't seen it, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you've got this protagonist who is... you know, she's dressed as a goth, but she's also like, she expresses this affinity for and preference for violence and hatred for like the, you know, good and light things in the world. But that's sort of valorized in her. It's this like inversion of the usual, you know, you're familiar with the Addams Family. Yeah. So it's that. But it's like, they didn't really mince words, like considering the audience and that it was a super mainstream product and a huge hit, they didn't. You know, and like well budgeted as well. I don't think it was like a massive surprise that it was a hit. They expected it to be a hit. They budgeted it that way. It was marketed that way. It was like, I don't know. I just didn't see things like that necessarily being as commonplace, like horror on Main. You didn't see that like 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago when I was the sort of primary market for a cultural item like that.
Yeah.
It just seems, I mean, Stranger Things is another example. If you want to look at like examples of how it's just in the mainstream in a way that it just did not used to be. And, you know, I don't think it takes a genius to go, oh, we're horrified with the world. And this is a proxy for that.
Well, that's, it's the same for sad movies. And, you know, sometimes you want to experience sadness. The best way to do it is do it in a movie. And, go in at 11 a.m., walk out at 1:30 p.m. and go, great.
Dust hands.
Yep, I can just move on and...
Controlled explosion.
Yep, it's out of my system now. Had a little cry. Feels great. That's how I got to the end of The Bear. I got to the end of The Bear and I was about 7 or 8 minutes from the end and I was like, oh, fuck, this is about to happen. And I was rapt because I don't cry that often. So I was like, fuck, here it comes. I just, whew, felt good. Slept really well like for the next couple of nights.
I can't remember what the word is in French, but there's like a French phrase that specifically means like ruined orgasm. Like when you like you're on the brink and then it just like goes when you're like, ah, now it's never come. Yeah. Like, ah, it's gone forever. I'll probably never come again.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is kind of, we know there's that same equivalent for sneezing. Is there the same equivalent for crying? Be like, I'm about to have a bloody good cry. Oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, something dumb happens, or like you, someone calls and you like, I was just about to let rip. Oh, I was just about to like, my eyes were going to be so red. I was going to like taste the salt. It was.
I was going to have snot dribbling down my face.
I was going to sob.
Yeah.
Neighbors were going to be concerned.
Yeah. I was going to roll around in my own shit. I was just really going to go for it. It's really going to let it happen.
You ruined it. You ruined it.
Thanks, Auntie Heather.
Yeah.
No. So the interesting thing was, but Michael, my producer friend, he was talking about horror in Australia.
Yeah.
Like it's not as big as deal here.
Yeah.
And
because more of us live above the poverty line, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And it also makes me wonder if anyone's really, like, don't get me wrong, people are going through hard times, but are people really looking around on top of those hard times and seeing, you know, what's happening in the waters around us and what's happening abroad and, you know, like...
I mean, I guess there are also really specific, like the gun, I mean, you know, gun violence in America puts the fear in people in a way that, like, so maybe, like, I think there are multiple inputs for the like existential dread that Americans feel.
Yeah.
This may not be reflective of like, although I don't know, are Australians maybe, I mean, because there is this story that Australia tells about itself, which may be relevant here, which is that we are, you know, a bit disengaged maybe and a little bit like shrug, you know, like, you know, that the thing about how, you know, it's very easy to get the French to riot. Like if, you know, there are 10 times in the last decade when the French, like, cars would have been set alight if this was in Paris.
Yeah.
Australians are just like, oh, give them another, 3 years, maybe they'll turn it around. Like, you know, we're just not that fussed. We're just like, have our say at the ballot box, and that's kind of
We are talking about this after, how many was it, 13 people decided to march in Victoria against, what was it, anti-transsexual.
So there was an anti-trans protest,
yes,
which was led by a notorious British activist who had announced a tour here,
right?
And then the whole thing got
fucking tour
crashed. Yeah,
everyone's doing it. That guy needs a fucking bad review. Yeah. That's what he needs.
There's a woman and everything is of the TERF variety, if you will. Is this an acronym? You're familiar with this acronym.
I don't think maybe I am.
So trans exclusionally, it's a bit of a slur,
right?
You know, which they would know about. TERF stands for trans exclusionary radical feminist. So it's kind of like a bunch of second wave and some third wave feminists as well.
Yeah.
You know, typically Gen X and older, who don't see trans women as real women.
Yep.
And some of them have, you know, J.K. Rowling being another example.
Yep.
And, you know, campaigning about bathroom laws and things like that. You know, really just an excuse to, it's trans hate dressed up as other rational arguments, in my humble opinion. But it became this magnet for everyone with a cause in Australia. So you had Nazis turning out, and I mean, I don't know anyone, you know, people would not have missed this story. And now that's going to be, you know, the Sieg Heil is going to be banned in Victoria. And you had,
a little bit late.
Anti-vax. Yeah. Well, you know what? I also read a news article this week that they've just cured the plague. They've worked out how to cure the plague. So it's never too late, is it?
Okay. Well, the one from 1066.
Yeah. I mean, it's been around since then, but like the last time it really, you know, it was the Middle Ages. You know, you bring out your dead, you know. So they've cured that. So that's good. We're on a pretty quick turnaround for banning the Sieg Heil in Australia. I think, you know, give it another.
I take it back.
Give it another. Yeah. So that's embarrassing for you, isn't it?
And, I know. On my podcast too.
And then I guess my social media feeds have really been full of a lot of pretty angry people in the queer community who either turned out to counter protest or they knew people who'd done that and then kind of got, you know, pepper sprayed by by the cops.
Right.
And, you know, experienced what they would call police brutality. Haven't seen the footage myself. But, you know, this all went on while, you know, a bunch of literal Nazis were sigiling till their heart's content.
Right.
And people were being pepper sprayed for saying, no, like trans rights are human rights.
Right.
Albeit in a very full-throated way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't everything fun?
Yeah, so there you go. There's that.
Well, that's exactly. By the way,
is that what you want?
Well, it was funny. Was I was reading that article on The Age yesterday, and I was looking at the guys just going, "You fucking losers!" Like, I just was so dismissive of them. You know, walking around in their fucking little black baseball caps.
The Nazis, in particular.
Yeah, and yeah. They're wearing black baseball caps and black T-shirts and black shorts, and one of them had a beard, and I was just like, I was so fucking angry and dismissive and making fun of him. And then I went to the bathroom, and while I was washing my hands, I looked up and I was wearing a black hat, black T-shirt, black shorts, and I was like, motherfucker. So anyway, if anyone would like
to get a new look,
I know. So I'm gonna buy some burnt orange T-shirts. I'm gonna get some big Okanui throwback shorts, and that's why I'm changing my look.
Well, yeah, I am.
I really hated Nazis before, but once they ruined what I like to wear, now,
yeah,
I'm activated.
Now, and better late than never.
Yeah, the plague.
I actually read the Nazi handbook.
Oh yeah,
because it got leaked, right?
Right.
And
what kind of font do they use?
Is it
aggressive?
Just Comic Sans. Just. Way through, because they're trying to, you know, they're sort of trying to repel people like you and me, I guess, that I'm, right. You know.
Well, so. Comic Sans will do it.
Yeah. Nearly worked, and I'm like, hang on a second. No, I'm going to read this, because I wanted to understand particularly their media tactics, because I was proposing a piece of research to basically work out how the media could avoid playing into Nazi tactics, which I think, you know, we really fucked up
right
this week in a few ways. And there's no perfect solution to this because, like, never not, you know, just not reporting it when they go and do something insane and fucked like, you know, that in public doesn't seem like a great solution either. But also this is kind of – it's to their script, the way that it really played out.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, they got a uniform. They recommend like certain brands of sneakers. They're very, very – who would have thought it? Those fascists, they're really controlling about what you do and don't wear. If you want to be in their little club, you got to wear like a really specific thing. So
it's true. Yeah. You never see a Nazi in a Hawaiian shirt just sitting back. You know?
I once saw one on the beach actually.
A Nazi on the beach?
Yeah, I saw it, which freaked me right out. I was at Kujin because he was having quite a nice time. I'm like, what's going on?
This sounds like a Butthole Surfers song. Like, what is happening here?
I don't know that Butthole Surfers song, but it was quite, you know, people overuse surreal, but it was literally surreal. I was at Kujin Beach.
Yeah.
It must have been about 6 years ago. And I was looking at the guy and he couldn't have been more than like a meter and a half in front of me. Like, they were the next people in front of me on the beach. Mm. And he was there with, I guess, like a woman, maybe his partner, and they were there with this young kid, possibly their son, couldn't have been more than six.
Oh,
and I was like, whoa. And I was there with my partner at the time. And I saw the guy and he was like covered in tattoos and like heaps of tattoos. I was like, I wonder if he knows that those two little zigzags, like he's obviously just, is it the Ford Falcon? It's like one of those.
Oh, yeah.
No, one of the cars. Yeah. Maybe it's a Commodore. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's like a car that has a symbol that looks like the SS symbol. And I looked at him immediately, first place, mistook him for like a petrol head, right? I'm like, oh, this guy just loves the hell out of Commodores or something. And like, oh, someone should really tell him that looks heaps like a Nazi tattoo.
Right.
And then my eyes tracked up his body and saw like a falcon perched on a swastika. And I was like, oh no, I think he knows.
Yeah, right. He's across it.
Yeah, I think he knows. I think he's.
You know what? Yeah. Even Nazis need vitamin D. Why not go to the beach, right?
Yeah. I can think of some reasons. But like, I flipped out because, like, I immediately projected into this man's mindset. I'm like, how is he having conversations with his son? Like, is he shy? Does he ever get self-conscious when he takes his shirt off at his beach? Does he go like, oh, no, what if Antifa's here to bash me? Oh,
yeah,
no. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just like, it was just a bizarre situation to see someone who – to see a Nazi having, a nice day out and an ice cream at Coogee.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind, and I've never really gotten over it.
I hope that young boy has grown up and is rebelling against his parents by being a sweetheart.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just being lovely.
Yeah. Did you say a soy eater? A blue-haired soy eater. Yeah.
You can't tell me to follow you, Dad. I'm gonna love everything. I am going to watch Frances Ha, and I'm going to love it.
I'm going to a bush doof. See you later, Dad. Yeah.
So you know, one of your shows revolves around a horror theme. That's why that was one of the other reasons I wanted to bring it up. And it hasn't just been X or The Purge. I've watched Barbarian.
Yeah,
I've been on a roll, and and I've been once again, I've been really enjoying them. And how's the horror show been playing out?
Yeah, great. I do. It's like invaded my dreams. I don't know if you ever when you have a show that gets so in your head that it invades your dreams. And so I'm doing a show about The Exorcist where I retell The Exorcist and kind of gay it up a bit in the process.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's how bad I am with horror films.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to bring myself to watch it start to finish.
The Exorcist.
Not since I first watched it, which was probably 15 years ago or something.
Right.
And so I've written a whole show about The Exorcist from reading the screenplay a bunch.
Right.
And watching the odd clip.
Yeah.
Reading a lot as well about as a journalist from a journalism background, just so terrified of being inaccurate somehow or which is, I don't think people are necessarily coming to comedy shows with that same level of scrutiny, but I am because I'm conditioned just twitchy about it, right? And so I've been reading the screenplay a lot for The Exorcist, which is if you're bad with horror but you want it, can I recommend it as a method for imbibing horror?
Right.
And it makes it a lot more heightened. Like every time, I've now sort of hypersensitized myself to it. So when I go to watch it, I just get I can't look because I know what's going to happen as well, and so that's almost worse than not knowing,
right?
Because then you're like, oh, now's the bit where and the noises start in the ceiling because of the potency of that film, that was exactly why I wanted to do it and be strip it for parts almost, and splice it with all this other cinema history. There's a lot of Austin Powers in there. I sort of splice the films at times.
Right.
And the Matrix.
Yeah.
And so it's all quite dreamlike anyway.
Yeah.
And I slip in and out of the Matrix plot. The Exorcist plot.
Right.
Over the course of the show. And yeah, I don't know. If people have come and been like, I was in it, maybe there's been some total fans of The Exorcist who've been horrified in the way that you're not meant to be horrified.
Right, yeah.
But I haven't heard from any of them, so yeah.
Well,
I'm loving it.
They're at home getting their Pazuzu dolls ready to send you to hell. But so I have a weird history with The Exorcist. I'd heard all about The Exorcist for a long time because it was the last horror movie that my mum went and saw of her own accord.
Mm.
And she...
And then she didn't want to see any more.
Well, she saw it at the cinema, and this is back when it first came out, and she was so terrified as a young mother, she slept with the light on for 3 weeks and has told me that if my face had looked anything slightly green or if any slight light had turned up in my eyes, it would have just been like...
She would have killed you.
No. She wouldn't have killed me. She just would have left. She just would have packed her bags and left.
Wow.
She was ready to go.
And she volunteered this information. You didn't, like, have to hold her feet to the fire to get it out of her by the sounds of it. This has the feel of a confession that just came tumbling out. This was something that was unsolicited, an unsolicited confession, if you will.
My mum is a very honest woman. And she told me that at a young age. But that was, I think it was more, I think the reason for telling me was I don't like horror movies and this is why I got so scared with that. I would have, you know, she just doesn't like being scared. So then it took me ages to finally see it. And the way I saw it for the first time was at the cinema. So they did a re-release of it.
Yeah.
And I went and saw it, went along with a friend of mine who is Catholic or lapsed Catholic at the time. And there were the creepiest thing that happened in the cinema was hearing him reciting the bits of Catholicism that the priest is saying on the screen.
Well, just, extremely creepy choice of your friend to say it out loud.
Well, but he caught himself. Like, he didn't realize.
Oh, he was involuntary.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. So he did, it wasn't like he was sitting there going, oh, here's our Rocky Horror Picture Show moment in The Exorcist.
Yes.
Let's throw rice at the screen. It was because he, even though he was lapsed, he'd been brought up a Catholic and it just kind of came out of him. And then he got the shakes from realizing that was happening, which then creeped me out even more.
Massively. I'm ex-Christian. And if I hear, like, you know, the special little set of words, you know, if it's because, you know, I've sort of flipped around to a few different denominations, but lots of time in the Anglican Church, some time in the Catholic Church, you know, been out for like a good, I don't know, 15 years now. Mm. But it's, if I hear my trigger word, I'm off.
Yeah.
I'm racing. I could still do, you know, there's still just, it's still just muscle memory. It's like lyrics to songs. It's just there, you know, you can just access it. But funny you mentioned your mum about The Exorcist, because it is the only film I reckon my dad's ever raised with me and been like, basically, like, he'd get this real serious look on his face and be like, you know, it's not playing. Like,
right.
You don't. And this was always the advice. Like, this was one of my earliest pieces of advice from my dad that really stuck, was like, you do not touch a Ouija board. To this day, I'm pretty certain, I'll have to check, but I'm pretty certain he reckons that you can get possessed from a Ouija board.
Right.
And that's just a thing that he believes. And I think that's something that happened to a lot of people in his generation, where it was like the film was so impactful because it was like, it was groundbreaking, right?
Yeah.
And it just scared the, like, people passed out. That's what it was famous for. Like, people passed out in the cinemas.
Yeah.
It got banned in certain places. It just broke the mold.
Yeah.
And my father, it's changed him forever. That is a film that has literally changed him and his worldview and basically his, like, threat assessment and his understanding of the supernatural forever.
Yeah.
Like, what other film has had that impact culturally?
It's pretty amazing to think about, especially because sometimes I hear criticisms of younger movie goers now who say, oh, it's really slow and it takes a long time before anything happens. But I think that's kind of missing the power of it, which is it's so normal.
Mm.
Like, it's so normal for so long
and
it's so kind of grounded. Like if you took the Ouija board part out, it would be like, oh God, what's wrong with this little girl? Like, it could easily be, you know, a story about a mum with a psychologically disturbed child. You know.
Totally. And I mean, you know, that's the thing, like, horror, you know, I love the kind of map of people trying to work out what certain kinds of horror are about. Like, you know, vampiric horror is about, you know, being queer. That's like a major kind of key interpretation of it. And, you know, I think The Last of Us is a really good example of that. You know, that's about, well, that was about a few things. It was about climate change. It was about the pandemic.
Yeah.
It was about capitalism.
Yeah.
Very much about capitalism, like the whole zombie genre.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's this other corner of horror that is kind of about, it is about illness and it's about mental illness and body horror and, of course.
Last of Us, I also watched that as well, which I was Not really interested in watching to begin with because it just didn't. I don't play video games. Stuff doesn't really appeal
to
me.
You came around, obviously.
Well, because it was like, well, it's HBO. It's the guy who did Chernobyl, another.
Yeah.
You know, real life, but horror series, and Craig Mazin, and then Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey. Yeah, I thought, I like both of them as actors. Well, you know what? I'll give it a go. And then I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. I haven't been that stressed out watching a TV show in a very long time.
Right. Well, judicious use of the zombie side of things. And also, a friend of mine didn't want to watch it and said they'd been burned by The Walking Dead. I said, The Walking Dead is your local club basketball and this is the NBA. Like, you know, there's setups. Like, there's one episode where they end up in a city and you go, oh, well, I guess they'll be here for a few days. No, one episode. Yep. They were there. They moved on. Great.
And I love that they had the restraint to leave. Yeah, as you say, like leave zombies out of some episodes. It was like, let's just make it about the human drama. It didn't have to always be one note. Interestingly as well, talking about the pace that people, you know, bitch about with The Exorcist, you know, maybe younger viewers, people also complained bitterly about the pace in The Last of Us.
Right.
There was kind of a meme online. It was like, it was just this frequent enough complaint that it was like memeified that people, they were like, you know, like the joke was basically like the things I would do to advance the plot to the Last of Us because I'm that like fucking desperate for something to happen. Like, just let something happen. I think, you know, that's a weird complaint because I think people sometimes say they're bored to cover for the fact that they're just incredibly stressed and they want resolution.
Right.
Like in a show like that, like actually what you want is like you just can't bear like oh my God, what's going to happen? And it is slow, but that is its strength, its tension.
Yeah.
It's not a lack of action. It's almost too much. There's too much going on and you feel overwhelmed, or certainly I did anyway.
You know, as I get older, one of the things that I realize is that I'm way out of touch. I would have been just...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Very happy for a whole episode of them being friends, hanging out and like eating and just sharing some stories. Like I was fine with that.
Yeah. One thing I really admired about that show, because, you know, like obviously, you know, it is somewhat a misery parade, but... again, the restraint, like that is more and more how I measure a good show is the restraint of writers. And you saw the same thing happening in Euphoria, where the thing that you would expect to happen normally, like the example I would use in Euphoria is, you know, when the jock meets with, or maybe it's the jock's dad, anyway, meets with like the trans girl down by the lake. I'm like, oh, no, this is where you get murdered. Like something awful happens. But they just have a chat and then they go their separate ways. Yeah. And it's like this really great – and then because then you're totally wrong-footed as well. And so, the bad thing, the misery when it happens is so much more impactful. And I felt like that The Last of Us did that really well as well where, you know, there were these moments where I'm like, we're about to – like everyone's going to die. There's going to be – something's going to come out of the shadows.
Yeah.
And it would actually just be eerily calm and quite nice for like the – you know, much longer than you would expect in a genre show like that normally.
It's great when something subverts the expectations like that. I'm not going to get this quite right because I haven't read it in a long time, but there was a comic book series by writer Grant Morrison and a plethora of artists And in one of the storylines, one of the main characters was a shaman who is a cross-dressing woman. So I don't know how to talk about this properly. She's a man, okay, but she dresses as a woman.
Yeah,
but
yep. She's kind of like living as a woman. Yeah, and, yeah.
So, and there's an issue where they are out partying, and she picks up a really hot, masculine, super masculine,
like a heterosexual
Latino man.
Right, gotcha.
And then the scene, she takes him back to the hotel.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, it's in a comic book, you know, and even though this. This was Vertigo. Your expectations is he's going to see her dick and not be able to cope.
And freak out, yeah.
Yeah, and he sees her dick and he's like, fucking rock and roll.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those, it was just this, it was so quietly subversive that this is when comics, this is when I was getting it issue by issue. So 4 to 5 weeks between issues.
Mm.
I reckon I was like 3 or 4 issues down the track before I realized how subversive it was,
yeah,
because it was just so normal that it was just like, ah, good work. And then it was like, oh.
Well, it also would have affected, like, maybe part of the delay there is that, like, it would have affected your trust relationship with the writers, right? Because then, like, it's that wrong-footed thing. You're like, literally anything could happen now. It's like the whole the red wedding thing, or, yes, like, you know, killing people. So, you know, they were just so trigger-happy with people, with main characters in Game of Thrones. And so it created this sense of actual proper chaos that more closely mimics something like what we experience in the real world, where there are no guardrails and there is no, you know, innate moral justice.
Mm.
And that's such a powerful, you know, position to have managed to get your show into,
yeah,
if you're a writer.
Yeah.
In the case of a graphic novel or comic book, yeah.
Yeah. So I wish more things did that, though, where they just, you know, it just took the, in a way, it's a shortcut, you know. It's like sometimes if two characters just talk, you can cut out a whole storyline, but you can actually open up something else in the process and go in a more interesting area. Like, how many times have you watched something and thought, God, I just wish someone would have a chat to each other. They'd sort this out.
Yeah.
Have a little talk.
Yeah.
Have a little catch up. You sent through some stuff as well, and I don't want to miss out on that. And so.
Oh, sure. This is just the stuff that's been jumping off the page at me. I've got a weird little patch of notes here, by the way.
It's great. Well, you sent through to me the calf with the smiling face mark.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been able to stop thinking about this one cow.
Yeah, with the big, it,
and
it's
if I
white.
Had a dollar for every time I'd, no. So this is a story that actually was on my birthday. It came out last week, and it was a story about a calf. I guess it's it says here the Holstein calf. I guess that's like a species thing, like a breed.
I guess, yeah.
And you know, it's written in like this really hokey way, like sort of like classic. This could be a news article from 50 years ago, the way it's written. It's like really like, you know, yuck, yuck kind of. Anyway, this cow was born with a smiley face on the side of its belly,
yeah,
right?
So it's the belly is white and it's got three black blotches, which are eyes and a nose and a smile.
Sort of like, but kind of like not the world's most reassuring smiley face. Like it's not like a... Do you know what I mean? It's not like a perfect graphic design, like have a nice day, smiley face, which has its own sort of sinister connotations.
Yeah.
At the moment. It's like a horror mask, face.
Yeah, if this calf turned out it was into Slipknot, you would not be surprised.
Fully, yeah. It looks like, it's like what's the guy, the skinny man who poisons the water with acid in Batman?
The Joker?
No.
Oh, the one, Red Hood.
No, he's like, he puts like hallucinogens in the water.
Oh, sorry, in the Batman. Riddler.
Yeah, all right. One of them. He used to be a psychoanalyst.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. I'll defer to your expertise on all things Batman. But like, it's like that mask, like the Hessian mask. Anyway, you get the idea. Creepy smiley face.
Scarecrow. I wasn't, you know, I got overwhelmed because it turns out Batman's villains at some point have poisoned the water in the comics true? Or the cartoons or the movies or anything. I got overwhelmed and I didn't know which one you were talking about.
I needed to be way more specific and I had no idea.
No. That wasn't your fault. I got overwhelmed with decades of Batman knowledge.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, it was impressive. Scarecrow. Yeah. So is that smiley face? But the article's like, it must have been hard not to crack a smile the morning this unusually marked cow was born. Megan and Barry Costa breed about 700 cousins. On and on. West Gippsland, this is happening. And then it's like, sent a photo straight to his wife. I couldn't believe it. I actually zoomed in at first to make sure none of our workers had added some extra lines or anything. Couldn't believe it. Crazy things happened. And then we keep going and Happy, so they've called him Happy.
Yeah, that's smart.
Happy's unique. Yeah, that's not going to end badly. Happy's unique colouring means he's quickly become a staff favourite. Despite being unlikely to join the Costa's roster of stud bulls, he's found a new niche for himself. He's going to become a bit of a pet, Mrs. Costa said. A few of our workers are keen to have him as a pet and a lawnmower in their yards as well. Final quote. He'll be around for a while.
Yeah.
Like, so this, just in case you've missed this.
Yeah.
This cow, what's here, this punchline is that this cow, it's going to be allowed to live. Not necessarily for the natural duration of its life,
yeah.
For an indeterminate period, because we see something that looks a little bit like our faces,
yeah.
The faces of our species in its side,
yeah.
And that is why it is being allowed to continue to live.
Yep. Yeah. Just for all you beef eaters out there, one day you'll see, have a look at this photo and one day know that you'll be fucking eating Happy in a McHappy meal. That's what will be happening.
But you know what I mean? Like, I don't be wrong.
I'd respect them more if they called it McHappy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that would at least be honest on some level. Do you know what I mean? Like, I am a beef eater. Don't get me wrong. This is not like a vegan tip. This is not me saying like, you know, although, you know, I have the utmost respect for vegans and I understand their argument. What I am saying though is like, this is a totally indecent game.
Yes.
Now the other cows are going to see this cow live,
yeah.
And be like, quick, get the mud.
Right.
Like, quick, get the paint. Or like, what a psycho thing to, like, I mean, I know they're probably not perceiving it and they're probably not planning. I'm anthropomorphizing again.
Right.
And it's only Monday. But like, you know, I guess I'm just like, what? It just seems utterly cruel. It seems crueler in many ways, way more psychopathic than killing Happy and eating him in the first place, rather than like creating this cruel fiction that there is a path out of this like destiny.
Well, it's insane that this is a happy, happy, joy, joy article. Yes. That's going to end with
yes.
Happy fucking served up alongside some carrots and some beans.
Maybe, but they're not going to tell him when. They're like, it is totally like sinister, this like sword of Damocles hanging over Happy's furry little neck. He'll be around for a while.
Well, maybe this will be the next step in evolution with animals, where they'll start, you know, suddenly animals will be born and they'll have the markings of the farmer's daughter's face.
Yeah.
On their
yeah, we're just gonna we want the Virgin Mary, please. Like yeah. it'll be like coffee art, like, you know,
yeah.
You know, you're sending back your latte if it doesn't yeah. have a windmill on it, a yeah. photorealistic windmill. Like we're gonna need more for these yeah. guys to survive.
Chicken breasts will just have like human embryos on them. Like, do you know what I mean? It seems like a smart move.
Oh.
Maybe this is what we're seeing.
Oh yeah,
that's a weird story. Oh, you sent it to me, and I immediately saw the photo and felt like I have an awful feeling. This isn't going where I want it to go, and I was correct.
I don't know. Where did you want it to go?
I wanted it to go somewhere where, I don't know, maybe
where
I was
less cross.
In a turn of events, I wanted the calf to have killed everybody and was on the run.
Yeah. I mean, I would watch that film. I would watch that film. Like, if the sequel to Cocaine Bear yeah. is Cocaine Calf.
Oh, yeah. Meth
and
Calf.
This calf goes on a rampage to avenge its yep. Ancestors and brethren,
yep.
then I'm there.
Yeah, Meth Calf, starring Laurie Metcalf. That would be where I would take that. It's a deep cut for all you Roseanne fans out there. But anyway, did you see Cocaine Bear?
I watched the trailer and that was enough.
I went to a preview and I had a good time. I don't think it was any funnier than what you probably expect it to be, and that was fine.
This is the thing. It's not that I was like, oh, this will be bad. It's that I'm pretty sure all the, like, don't get me wrong, the trailer made me laugh. Oh, it made me laugh. I'm like, I've made a scene in the office. I made a spectacle of myself. I was laughing. Oh, was I laughing? But I was like, I reckon I would laugh the exact same amount in the cinema.
I reckon there's more jokes than you would realize. But I don't think, like, I've heard some people say it's not funny enough. And I'm like, I reckon it's exactly as funny as you expect.
Yeah.
And seeing it in an audience with a friend who, my mate was tired and had been stressed at work, and I'd been a bit stressed, and we had a good time.
We've talked about funny deaths before on this podcast, because I've got an obsession with what makes a death funny.
Yeah.
What was it that made the deaths in Cocaine Bear funny?
Just seeing people get ripped apart by a bear on cocaine.
Is it the pointlessness of it?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Like, probably, once again, it's horror adjacent, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, so, it's totally horror adjacent.
So, like, I think that's where my mood is, that I was just like, yep, he's an arsehole, dead. Yeah, that person's an arsehole, dead.
So, wait, they do moral justice in the Cocaine Bear universe, where it's like the bear gets people who, like, need to get got?
No, they're just a bit annoying, dead. You know, that's fine.
That's a crime. That's crime enough for me.
Yeah, and that's why can I give away something important about the ending?
Yeah, go for it.
The bear doesn't die. Great.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's great.
That's fantastic.
I didn't want the bear to die. I wanted the bear to stay hooked on coke and
murder
people.
I want the bear to go into business.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe that it's based on that true story where they nicknamed the real bear Pablo Escobar, and they don't use that once in the movie.
I thought that was a gag that it was based on a...
No, no, but the fucking bear had a... You know what happens in the real world.
What happens?
Does all this cocaine and has a heart attack and drops dead.
Oh, yeah.
It's a short film. It's not a full-length movie.
See, I would watch the sequel. I mean, equally, I would watch the sequel if the bear went to rehab.
Right.
And still had anger issues, and then, like, it's still a horror. Like, everyone still dies. But it's because the bear is now sober and but has a taste for blood. I don't know.
I would see that as well.
This thing writes itself.
Yep. Any other animals you want to see on drugs?
I'd like to see Happy on some antidepressants.
Oh my god.
I think giraffes would be pretty cute if they were sleepier. Like, if they had like a sloth level of sleepiness.
Goodness.
But were, because they've got like those big droopy necks, and they've got and they've got the eyelashes.
Yeah.
So if they were like sleepy, then that would be real. That would be pretty cute.
Oh yeah, mooncake giraffe. Where a giraffe eats a whole lot of mooncake, and then we watch for 15 minutes while he eventually gets his head up to the top leaf.
Is the branch? Is mooncake? Sorry, I feel like this made me feel very uncool. Is that like weed? Edibles?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've just never heard of that before.
Yeah.
I'm down.
No. I reckon it's old. I reckon I've just brought something out from 1978. Yeah, edible giraffe. There you go.
Yeah. Edibles. Giraffes on edibles. I am seriously considering your question. I'll tell you very seriously.
Meth duck. Whole lot of ducks on meth.
I think that'd be terrifying, because I think in the same way that geese are terrifying, I would like birds to be sedated, please.
Oh yeah.
Because they're probably a little bit, you know. I absolutely want monkeys sedated, because they're moving a bit too, they're a bit kind of twitchy. And then all of a sudden you're in a Thai zoo.
Have you seen Nope?
Yes.
That opening.
Yeah. Wait. Oh, Yeah.
I reckon the opening is the scariest part of that film.
Yeah, it really, especially, it sets a high bar, and then after that, the monster kind of...
I don't know how I feel about that film. And, you know, so I love going to the movies by myself, and it's one of the rare times I've walked out and gone, God damn it, I wish I'd seen this with someone, because I needed to talk about it.
Yeah, and I guess, all, you know, the expectations were so high because of Get Out and...
Well, it's funny. I feel like I really enjoyed it and had a really good time, but I've also felt like I didn't really get it, and I felt like there was so much going on that it was like, oh, it's about this. Oh, no, I think it's about this. Actually, I think it's about both of those things. Hang on, what's this thing over here? Hang on a sec. I wasn't expecting this layer. Jesus Christ, what is happening? Is this Jaws? Is this Close Encounters? What the fuck are they talking about? And I felt like it was... It overwhelmed me with all the ideas.
Yeah.
Almost incoherent.
It was over full conceptually, but you forgave, or certainly I forgave a lot of it. Like, the experience was enjoyable just because they, much like they did with Get Out, built a horror film that didn't like look, feel, sound or taste like a horror film in many ways.
Right.
And people just loved having that kind of like, kind of this blue chip sort of, I mean, I don't know, it's a TV term, but like this very, like, I don't know, art forward offering.
Yeah.
Like this art forward thing that then was just like, and now there's some blood.
Yeah.
You know, like people enjoyed that. And I liked that. I was like, oh, that in itself was exciting.
Yeah.
That in itself was exciting.
Yeah.
And to see character. Anyway, yeah, I could go on. But
speaking of, you know, forgiving, you sent me an article from goop.com.
So sorry.
That's all right. It's the first time I've ever been on this page.
I went on to look at the famed Crystal Dildos article, but was the second time I'd ever been there because I was in the market for some stone cold bullshit because you had sent me some stone cold bullshit.
Yes.
And I was trying to meet your stone cold bullshit with stone cold bullshit, maybe even raise it. And I think I did a better job. So I think I win. People can be the judge. Other people can be the judge of this.
By the way, one of the reasons I've never gone to Goop is because I actually genuinely really enjoy Gwyneth Paltrow as an actor. And I've liked her in a lot of movies. And I also know that she is Coco Bananas. So that's why I've...
Yep.
Try not to.
Oh, you say that as well? I thought I was the only person in the world who said cuckoo bananas.
Cocoa bananas?
I say cuckoo bananas.
I say cocoa.
Well,
okay.
I guess you're wrong.
Cuckoo, cocoa, cocoa. Back to the Beatles. Yeah. I am the Eggman. Yeah, so do you want to.
You tell me. You because I was responding to your insane thing that you sent me. So
right.
And I'd never heard of this before, so you start.
This is a brand new thing. So there's a new group of people on Earth who believe they're aliens, and they're star people or star seeds, and they're individuals who believe they have come to Earth from other dimensions to help heal the planet and guide humanity into the golden age, a period of great happiness, prosperity, and achievement. And that is insane, and I would not be surprised if I am.
Yes. Wait, you are one?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing.
I'm leaning into it.
I read the, like, because I'm, like, treating this thing like the DSM, right? I'm like, let's check this out. And I'm like, and reading it like the DSM, I am a starseed.
I'm too.
So sorry, but I am a starseed. Whereas it's like there were a few things, but the thing that really sealed it for me was, you get overwhelmed by life. Hold on, there's that.
Yes.
The desire to explore and experience new cultures and new spheres.
Recharge by spending time alone. What did I tell you?
Yes.
What did I just tell you before we started recording? I've just spent a few days.
Totally. Yeah.
That's how I'm going to identify now.
And then they're like, oh, and you often have like some shit wrong with you, like maybe some autoimmune disorders. And I'm like, bingo.
Yeah.
I've filled my bingo sheet.
Yeah.
I am starseed.
Yeah. I've got poor eyesight.
I got a few things. I got some. Yeah. I've survived bloody leukemia. I've got, you know, I got some. I'm medically interesting, which is not a thing you ever want to be.
Right.
I've got like 14 doctors. I'm okay. I'm all right. But I've got 14 doctors.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a star. I'm a bloody starseed. Anyway,
are you going to start identifying as that when you have to fill out forms where it says male, female?
No, I've run out
other?
Of space. I've filled the form already.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's no room left. No, but I mean that would be fun. I don't know. I think I am. I've done a lot of. I am very fascinated by alternative spiritualities, and have looked into them before. And I think people have a much more. Oh God! Now I'm about to defend the starseed people. People have a much more complicated relationship with alternative spiritualities than we sometimes give them credit for, and they are actually not all that literal.
Yep.
I got to say, this one does sound pretty off the map though. But yeah, like, but you know, for example, of the people who engage with astrology,
right,
and kind of are familiar with the law and the, you know, LORE law, the like, you know, how that whole system works, and maybe even talk about it a bunch, maybe even read their horoscope every day, or, you know, semi-frequently, maybe they even pay someone and go and like get told what to do once a year, all but a very small fraction of those people are actually making decisions in their lives or being governed in any way by what outsiders would classify as a belief system.
Right.
You know, if the star sign's like, you know, oh, don't, you know, it's a bad week to get surgery, you know, almost everyone except for a handful, it must be said, are giving that horoscope the finger and being like, absolutely, what of course I'm getting surgery. Whereas other kind of, you know, capital R religions, people are going to go along with the advice in a more literal way, which is actually kind of more bonkers potentially when you think about it. Like people's engagement with astrology is a lot more like choose your own adventure. It doesn't insist on, you know, owning you and, you know, every corner of your brain. It's like, you know, duck in, duck out, we don't mind. We're very relaxed. And I wonder, starseeds does scan like it's part of that family of like new age religion, spiritualities. Maybe people are like, I feel like I am symbolically a starseed.
Like I'm totally into it.
Anyway, and I read that and I was like, oh, great. It reminded me a lot of the discourse around twin flames.
Yes.
Now, have you, which is the group article, which I sent you. Now, have you, had you come across this before?
No, not at all.
Okay. So I think people are a little bit wise to it now. There may even be a podcast along these lines, but it was one of those things that went pretty feral on the internet. It was something that you could like read about on message like, you know, forums like Reddit and you know, people would talk about and basically built this theory together about what it is. And it's this idea that a soul is split in two and, you know, resides in two separate bodies. And then sometimes those people are lucky enough to find each other and reconnect. And it's an incredibly strong bond, you know, much in the way that you and I have where, you know, a great example.
Right.
Twin flames. Very different from a soulmate.
Yes.
Yeah, which is like, you know, if you read the twin flame theory, it's like, oh, it's different from that. We're different, especially you can have many soulmates. Mm. There's only one twin flame and not everyone's lucky enough to find it. And maybe they'll be like, maybe it's not romantic. It's just like this crazy connection.
Yeah.
And you can't look away. And it's like, maybe you're 60 years apart. You know, maybe it's not you know, maybe it's really awkward and weird and, you know, and people won't understand and they're going to judge you, but like you're twin flames and you two will understand and know. And then, and you know, magical things happen when you're reunited. But it kind of got like, I don't know, I fell down the twin flame online rabbit hole and there was a whole lot of overlap, surprise, because it's like magical thinking, a whole lot of overlap with conspiracy theory world, which may or may not be the case with the starseed universe, but a lot of these like very online located theories of spirituality that have, you know, kind of lived in, they've had their entire life cycle on the internet. They didn't ever come from like a more terrestrial origin, a bricks and mortar community, if you will. It was like that they came from message boards. They often kind of are interwoven with and coexist with the mythology of something like QAnon, for example.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, that was an overlap. There was a whole lot of like, anyway.
I'm so angry at QAnon for many reasons, but mainly for making it very difficult to enjoy old episodes of The X-Files.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, because like Fox Mulder was cool. And now he's not.
But was it? Okay, I watched pretty much all of the X-Files over a very long period of time.
Yeah.
But I was drunk for some of it, and so there are holes, and I don't know that I picked up everything. I don't remember there being lizard people. Were there lizard people? Was that like one of the plots?
It might have been one episode. There was a lot of seasons of the X-Files.
But that wasn't like one of the big overarching, because like the central thing for QAnon is that they're all lizard people.
It's the John Ronson them scenario and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's such a you know, because it was like once upon a time the conspiracy theories were fun.
Yeah,
you know, like the face on Mars,
totally,
that they saw, you know, all that kind of stuff. And now it's like, right, the right wing ruins everything. Can't we just enjoy that stuff. No,
this is your key quibble with Nazis, is that they've ruined the X-Files.
Well, my key quibble with Nazis is that they dress like me
That was the number fucking one concern.
Now I'm wearing burnt orange t-shirts. Like, yeah. This is a
and frankly, honestly, you did look better in black. So.
Ah, man, it's like it's hard though for you. There's a specific reason I wear black.
Yeah, because I'm out of uniform to begin with. I've got the pink hair. I can still wear my black clothes because no one's looking at me going, maybe a Nazi. Like, if I'm a Nazi, I'm pretty deep cover now.
And failing.
Yeah, failing. I mean, I've got some not suitable for work tattoos on my body, naked ladies. Nazis don't like that kind of thing, not the way that I have it. I managed to get it on TV, on national TV for the first time this week.
Oh, how'd you do that?
I just wore a T-shirt with short enough sleeves.
Right.
And so at 7:30 in the morning, there was like a pretty intense kind of, you know.
Yeah. What was this on?
This was on ABC Breakfast.
Oh, right. Was it mentioned? Breakfast.
No, I just want to put it in there for long enough and see how long it takes for someone to complain.
Really? Do you think someone will complain?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't think they should be listened to.
No, but just want to see.
I do want to see.
You just want to.
I just want to see. I mean, maybe they just wouldn't tell me as well because I'm not like I'm there as a guest rather than being on staff. But like,
oh yeah,
yeah. Having worked at the ABC for like a good 15 years, that I can tell you for sure. In fact, you know, I hadn't even considered this. It's possible.
Yeah,
they've already been flooded with complaints.
Right,
and I just wouldn't have known.
Right, because they don't pass them on.
They wouldn't pass them on to me.
Yeah, what would they complain like? That you had a nice lady tattoo.
Well, you know, she's doing. So she's really but quite
naked.
You can
see her.
Yeah, vagina. She's spread her legs.
Actually,
there.
You know what? Yeah, I can see what's going on there. Yeah. Now that I look closer.
Yeah, it's quite intense.
And people who
and it's not sleazy, by the way. It's beautiful.
No.
I want everyone to imagine like the most beautiful version of this that they possibly can.
She looks like she's sunbaking.
Yeah. Well, that was the premise.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and it's. I got my friend.
Maybe she's had too much chili and she's rubbing her tummy.
Yeah, she's rubbing her tum. And she's, yeah. Anyway, I put it on Breakfast TV and I'm going to keep doing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you upset, if whoever gets upset by that, if you upset them, I'm wrapped.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about happy.
I think that's how it is. It's like, it's sort of, you know, forcibly applying the filter as to who is going to enjoy you or not. Because I think you kind of earlier in life, you know, particularly, you know, when you first sort of step out onto whether it's a stage or in front of a microphone in the media or whatever, you can get very caught up with, very preoccupied with needing to be liked by everyone in the audience. And complaints and feedback really rattles you. And because that's how we're socialized.
Mm.
We're socialized to want to please everyone, and that's a very healthy impulse because – you know, that's how, you know, we live in a society, et cetera, et cetera. However, you can't apply, you have to sort of suppress that socialization in order to function if you want to have any version of public life and not only learn to tolerate the fact that some people will dislike you, but relish it because it means you are not being so anodyne as to be pleasing to literally everyone. Like, you know, the YouTube star Mr. Beast or like Carl Stefanovic or, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at the people who attract statistically, like, you know, the lowest number of complaints, they're not making something or doing something that you would ever want to emulate, that you would feel proud of making. And so taking steps towards that, even baby steps towards that by trying to, you know, not offend, not even please, but fail to offend the greatest number of people is an ass backwards way to go about things.
Yeah.
And so I have got to a point now where I get excited when I find a filter that I think is going to, you know, weed out or filter out, if you will, you know, the people who I'm like, well, you weren't for me anyway. And this is just going to like get you off board nice and early.
Yeah.
So you don't continue to get upset with me and I have to hear about it.
One of the best things that can happen when hanging out with someone early on is when they say something so horrific that you just know, oh, I don't have to waste any more time on this situation.
Yeah.
And then dropping the hammer down and then walking away from that person.
Dan Savage is a you know, kind of relationship guru. People who don't know him, great podcast, Savage Love. He is a huge advocate for and no one ever dates this way, right? But like getting all your weird shit on that, like maybe even like your trauma or your kinks or like, you know, anything that's like is potentially going to be a deal breaker for people later.
Yeah.
Get it all out like super early. Like, right. Like uncomfortably early.
Yeah.
Because times, you know, we don't have heaps of it and you know, you're gonna, it's only going to get harder. Like a secret, the longer it stays a secret, that it becomes a lot harder to get out.
Yes.
You know, if it starts to feel like a secret. And yeah, I mean, I guess I've kind of been in that position and now I'm sort of, so, you know, I'm not, yeah, I'm an advocate for that. And yeah, you want to know that, you know, whether it's romantic or whether it's a friendship or a work thing, you know, you want to, or you're, it's like a job interview even, and like, you want to sort of know what that person's going to be like.
Yeah.
Save yourself a world of trouble.
What's the, we should finish up, but let's finish on this. What would be the funniest thing heading into a relationship with someone that you would, but is also like it's serious, like it's a serious part of your personality. But what would be the funniest thing to drop on someone to let them know, hey, if you can't deal with this, then we're not going to make it.
I think the thing that has like upset a lot of people and nowadays I would maybe think to announce it, is that I will stop listening maybe partway through a sentence very frequently and maybe start not just thinking about something else but talking about something else, and it's quite involuntary. I am working on it. I have ADHD. I'm being medicated now. Maybe it'll get better. Yeah. Who can say?
Who knows?
Early days. But I do sometimes just they'll say something and it's not gone in. So, and that, you know, historically, people don't love it.
Right.
And sometimes we're very engaged, obviously. Mm. You know, like, we have great chats. But, you know, if you're around me 100% of the time, you might find me occasionally, you know, what looked and felt a lot like rude.
Right.
But I'm not. There's no malice behind it.
Well, anyone becoming friends with you who might be listening to this, they should just know you just wait for you to stop talking about this new thing you've brought up and you just go back to what you were talking about before and you don't even realize that you've moved back and you're in. That's fine.
Yeah.
Don't take offense. It's fine.
You've cracked the code. That's how you... I'm going to talk about the cow for as long as I'm going to talk about the cow, and then one day I'll stop talking about the cow.
And then we'll be on to something
else.
And
then we'll go back to whatever.
Yeah. Mine would be if we go and experience something that I'm quite clearly loving and you don't like it, I don't need to hear your opinion. Don't share it with me.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? What if you don't like the thing?
That's different.
That's a nightmare trait.
But let me come to it at my own. But anyway, like to be completely honest, I'm now at a point in my life that I would rather experience the things I love by myself.
Yeah.
And then I don't have to put anyone through.
You're a classic starseed.
I am a starseed. I'm from fucking...
You're a special boy.
I am. I've come here to save everybody. And I wish everyone would understand that.
Good luck. You've got your work cut out.
I know. Better get to work. I was going to put up our next Mission Impossible podcast tomorrow, but instead I'm putting this up, which means this is going up on the 21st of March, and you have shows coming up.
Oh, I so do. Yeah, I've got a bunch of shows happening in Melbourne as part of the Comedy Festival. I'll be doing Jazz or A Bucket of Blood, which is an absurd two-hander sketch with Jane Watt, where I want the show to be about a bucket of blood that I've put on stage, and she wants the show to be about jazz, and that's that show. And I love it. It's one of my favorite things I've ever made.
Right.
It's supremely dumb, and we dress like little schoolboys, and that's yeah. It's just that big gay energy. And then the other one is my magnum opus. It's the show about the Exorcist. It's called Your Mother Chucks Rocks and Shells. Heads will know what I'm talking about. They'll get it straight away. And yeah, it's about insomnia and the Exorcist and trying to get to sleep. And this show's quite, it's constantly 2 a.m. in the show. So to give you a sense of like what you're getting yourself into, it's 2 a.m. the whole time. Yeah, that's happening at the Butterfly Club during Melbourne International Comedy Festival. And I'm also doing seasons of both in Sydney Comedy Festival. You can check the website for details. They're all about a month away. So hopefully, unless you're very busy and important, you've probably got some free time to come.
Yes, please go and check that out. I feel like I'm awake at 2 a.m. more than I'm not. Even if I go to bed early, I seem to wake up at 2 a.m. and...
Do you use... This is not... I was about to say, do you use weird corners of the internet, weird parts of the internet to help you get to sleep? And that 1,000% sounds like I'm asking you about porn. But, like, not that, but, like, ASMR and, like, you know all that stuff?
Yeah. No, yeah. You know, during lockdown, the lockdown one... The best, like the original, the good one.
Yeah.
I listened to Max Richter's album Sleep every night.
Oh, that's good.
That did help.
Yeah, that's very good.
And that is a very pleasing way to spend a night, because even when I would wake up, I would hear, Max Richter, and then I'd go back to sleep.
Another one for you to try.
Mm-hmm.
And is it like, it's not totally uniform, so maybe, you know, depending on what people use. But I've found it quite good at times. Music for Psychedelic Therapy by John Hopkins.
Okay,
so it's
great.
You know, similar sort of like instrumental electronica, ambience, very psychedelic but minimalist.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend that one as well. But yeah, the shows, it's like, it's kind of like about capturing that weird corner of the internet that is like trying to get you to sleep, but doing so in the strangest possible ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Let's get you back on after the Melbourne Comedy Festival, hear how it all went. Let's see if we can find out more about Happy and if he has become McHappy.
I can't.
I'm going to go and break Happy out. Next time you're here, you're going to ask what have I been up to, and I'm just going to point to my lounge and there's going to be Happy watching TV.
And on look, that's honest at least, you know? That's honest. I'm fine with that. Look, I'm not angry at all. It's fine. Ugh.
Well, I'm obsessed with it now as well. So thanks, Ange.
Welcome.
Thank you to Ange for joining me today. Make sure you check her shows out at the Melbourne and Sydney Comedy Festivals. No appearances in Sydney for me, but you will be able to see me in Melbourne. Head to justinhamilton.com.au/gigs for details to Big Squid Live and my solo show, Little Victories. Remember, use that discount code PODCAST. I'll be back later in the week with our new segment, Pop Friday, which is a rundown of things I've seen, read and enjoyed in the last few days. It's a new segment. It's a pretty loose segment. And hopefully I'll have a guest, but if not, I'll have some thoughts for you. I'm seeing a little film called John Wick 4 tomorrow night, so keep your eyes peeled out for that. I reckon I'll have some thoughts. I hear it's like 2 hours and 45 minutes, which seems too long for a John Wick movie, but also great. I'm up for it. Let's see what happens. In the spirit of Andrew's new show and how we were talking about horror, let's finish today with a quote from Wes Craven. Some people ask why people would go into a dark room to be scared. I say they are already scared and they need to have that fear manipulated and massaged. I think of horror movies as the disturbed dreams of a society. Until then.
We're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.